Russell Earnshaw here in the car with Sam Jarman. He's excited about how cheap my car was in Slough. We are living the dreams.
Maidenhead, mate. We're Maidenhead. In Maidenhead. We're in the posh
Maidenhead
bit.
Side of Slough. As I've just said to Sam, we're going to start off with a game. We're going to play stone, scissors, paper. First to five, 2 points if you win with scissors. He's already accused me of having a strategy or a plan. I don't, but you ready? So we'll go rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Okay.
So that's what the kids do. Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. 1-0 to me. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. 2-0 to me. Right, I'm hating your strategy. Do you want to have a think of it? Ready?
Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, I'm getting killed. He has got a strategy.
4-0. 4-0. It's a naked lap of the car park. If I get anywhere in this. Ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. 5-0! 5-0!
How bad cool. Might that?
Oh,
yeah,
man.
You're dying. You've got a strategy. There was a strategy there.
But you...
I've just been raging about techniques and strategies, and you've just killed me using a strategy. That is...
Yeah, I just got some happiness from that. struggle now. Back to reality. I've invited what I really want to chat with Sam. Chatted to him a lot over the past year or so when we were back involved with the pathway around some of the stuff you're doing. Do you want to just do a quick intro and maybe bring to life some of the stuff you think we might talk about today?
Okay, mate. So my background is I'm a golf
5-0,
pro.
5-0, by the way.
5-0. I nearly swore there. I'm not allowed to swear. Are we allowed to swear on this or not?
If you want.
Oh, go on then. So my background's golf pro, golf coach. Played full-time for 10 years and then realised I wasn't making any money, so got into coaching and just basically kept running into the same things when I started coaching people I was running into playing, which was that, you know, the physical stuff was fine, but it was my thoughts and feelings that were getting in the way of me playing the golf that I wanted to play.
The yips, is that what they called it?
Yeah, that was a little bit of it. That's an extreme physical version of what we're pointing to. But, you know, it's just... That became apparent that other golfers were finding that as well. I could get somebody swinging it great and hitting it great in the studio or on the practice ground, and then they'd be phoning me up going, I shot 85 in the medal again on Sunday. So... It just became, you know, and I kind of knew this when I was playing, that the psychological routines and strategies and techniques that were being offered just weren't really helping. And I literally stumbled upon just a different understanding about how the human experience is created about 10 years ago. And started to learn more about that myself. Had a big impact in my life, both coaching coaching and playing. Started sharing it with other people and found the same thing, that when people started seeing more clearly where their experience of life was coming from, they started having more fun, started playing better, started having more ease and loving their relationships. And that's kind of led me into not just working with golfers, but rugby coaches, rugby players, cricketers, footballers. Yeah, anybody that will spare me the time to listen to me, really.
Nice. And obviously work with a couple of guys that I know well, so Jeff Patterson, Russ Bolton, people like that. We were just talking then, and I said to you, what would be the first time you met a coach, what type of questions would you be asking him? And, what type of questions?
You know, where does happiness come from? What's the purpose of life?
That's a pretty small question to start with, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, this is why it's almost like we're afraid to go that deep because it's sport and people, you know, think sport's different. But we have to have foundations. We have to have underpinnings of what we're doing when we're coaching people or talking to people. And if we don't understand the fundamental nature of the human experience, the stuff we do on top of that is belief. And, you know, another question I ask coaches is, you know, what do you trust more, your beliefs or your experience? Because when you understand your experience and you understand how that's created, you realize that your experience is pretty much always the same. It's based on the same things. Whereas every coach that I talk to, if I say to you, you know, do you think beliefs are important? They say yes. If I then ask them whether their beliefs have changed over the last 10 years, they kind of laugh and admit that, yeah, a lot of their beliefs, the things that they believe strongly in, have actually changed over the last 10 years. Well, how can a belief be that important if it changes all the time? Surely we should be pointing coaches to what's true. And if something's true, it never changes. It's constant, it's permanent, it's fundamental. So if we can help coaches understand what doesn't change, what's always true, what never changes, what is permanent about our experience, then they've got a foundation to then work from. If we're constantly offering strategies, techniques, routines, nice ideas, which, you know, some of this stuff works, some of it doesn't, but we're always almost, we're on quicksand. We've not got anything fundamental underpinning what it is we're offering players and coaches that we work with. And you know, in my experience, you know, I work with some players right through from, you know, professionals down to grassroots kids, do some work in schools. When a human being at any level of what they're doing sees the real foundations, the fundamental nature of their experience, everything else starts to make sense.
Give me some examples. I'm thinking of some of the constants, some of the things that don't change for coaches. Give me some answers you've heard, or give me some.
Okay, so let's go back to the nature of our experience. Our experience is always changing. So there's a lot of stuff going on with coaches at the moment around environment and culture. Well, you know, context is another word that is used. Well, there is one element of our experience which is never changes, and this isn't coaches, this is human beings. The awareness of our experience is the one thing that is constant. So it doesn't matter what type of experience you're having, the awareness of that experience is the same. It never changes. It's been the same from the moment you have, you know, from 5 years old, it will be the same when you're 95. Your experience might vary massively within that time span, but your awareness of that experience will be the same. So if we get coaches to see that the experience that they're having or a player's having is just a temporary, ephemeral, in-the-moment thing, but the awareness of how that experience is being created, the awareness of that experience is the constant. They don't spend hours, days, you know, a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of money trying to develop an environment and culture which is ephemeral. You know, our experience of our environment changes from moment to moment. You can be, you know, if you've got a kid in an academy who's a gun player, he suddenly comes up to you after a training session and says, "Coach, I'm really struggling here. I'm not enjoying my rugby anymore." Well, what do you do? What would you do with that?
What would I do?
Yeah.
To try and get to understand why.
Okay. So where would you start with that? Where's that likely to lead you in terms of the why? What's that kid going to point to in terms of where he believes his feelings of enjoyment are coming from?
I think, in my experience, he'd probably talk about some of the other people in the environment.
Okay.
The impact of them on him.
Yeah. So he's going to point to the content of his experience. So it might be other people, it might be pressure, it might be, you know, conflicts between his school work and his, you know, he's gonna because we're conditioned to look outside into the content of our experience. That's where he's going to look, and if as a coach that's where you point him, he's going to continue to look in that direction. And you might spend all the time in the world changing that environment to suit him or changing the culture to suit him. But wouldn't you be better helping that kid understand where his experience is coming from? So, yeah, you can say, well, you know, why? And as I say, he'd point to all of these external circumstances. But a lot of kids, you know, they enjoy, you know, we're the same. I bet you enjoy coaching one day and you don't enjoy it so much another day.
I enjoy it every day, but yeah, there's days that are, that feel better than others.
Yeah.
So that's
just the nature of the human experience, is that some days we feel good and some days we don't. But what we're conditioned to do is, when we feel down, or even when we feel up, is we're conditioned to look outside for the reasons why. And that's not how it works. You can have a kid in a Premiership football academy who hates football, who doesn't enjoy football, and you can have a, despite that supposedly being the best environment or culture that's available, and you could have a kid in as you've just used the example, you know, a township in South Africa who's having an amazing experience of sport despite being in a culture and environment which would seemingly be nowhere near as good.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about Kalesia. So every year we used to go to the township in Kalesia and do some stuff with Waves for Change. And I remember seeing those kids thinking, wow, they are joyful, happy. The most joyful, happiest kids I've ever seen. And yet, if you would actually look external, as you say, externally at their context of poverty, of murder, of lack of parents, of all that stuff, then it's pretty remarkable. However, I guess if you would say, well, we spoke a bit about it. I mean, it's clearly more likely that to see those type of, to see kids experiencing this, being like this anyway.
Yeah, you know, kids are actually closer to understanding their experience than adults are in a lot of ways, because they don't have a lot of the conditioned thinking that adults have. You know, they're happy when they're happy, they're sad when they're sad, and they know that, you know, they haven't got anything on that.
Give me some conditioned thinking that you regularly come across in adults.
So again, I just use, you know, if somebody's not enjoying their experience of a sport, they would look outside to the environment or the culture for the reasons of that, and then try and make changes.
What about coaches?
Again, well, coaches, that would be a classic coaching thing, wouldn't it? It's, you know, the team's not winning, we're going to change our training methods, we're going to change our pre-match thing, we're going to change our half-time talk, we're going to, you know, do whatever the latest superstition is to try and impact on how people are feeling. That's the model, that's the world that we live in, that's the culture, the sporting performance culture that we live in, is that if I change the external circumstances, the culture and the environment, then it will change the experience that people will have. Well, you know, I've talked to people in, as I say, in Premiership football clubs and rugby clubs, who they believe that the player experience is coming from the environment. And you ask them, well, so that you're telling me that every single player and coach within this environment is happy all the time? And they'll say, well, no, of course not. And I say, well, it can't be the environment that's causing people to feel the way they feel. We've got this misunderstanding of you know, a causal relationship and a correlation. People are seeing correlations and attributing a causal relationship to it. And that's masking the real reason why people feel the way they feel, which is, you know, the clarity with which they see where their experience is coming from. That's the thing that's really going on underneath the environment.
And people or places that you've seen that where this makes sense to them.
Mate, I'm really sorry. I don't like to talk about kind of who I'm talking to, and just from a
cool. So, I mean, I'm just thinking from a rugby point of view. I mean, people would attribute environment, culture, so Exeter, Saracens, those type of places, to ultimately to well-being and performance.
Yeah.
What would your view be then? So
look, a lot of as we had the conversation earlier, when something works, it works because it's pointing to what's true about human beings and about our experience. So a lot of what's going on in the places that have what we'd describe as a good culture or a good environment, there's a lot of good stuff going on there, and they are because they are pointing to what's true. So, you know, coaching from love rather than fear, for example. If that's, but that's not a technique, that's just pointing to what's true. You've seen it where you go into an environment and it's not about what the coach does or what the coach says, it's about how the coach shows up and how well he understands where he's coming from.
Yeah.
That to me is the key to this. And the best coaches, as I say, coach from love rather than fear, and then that is borne out, then that is that kind of shows up in all the external stuff that goes on within the environment and within the culture. But it's not the environment and culture, it's what's behind that makes the difference, and that's what we're missing.
Cool. So
we look at changing the culture and the environment all the time. We don't go beyond that and find out what's really driving it.
Let's talk about Mourinho.
Okay.
Without wanting to put him off as a potential future client. So there's an interesting one for me. It looks like he's had success in certain places. He's struggling at the moment at Manchester United. How do you see that situation? What type of stuff are you noticing?
Okay, so I wouldn't talk about... Let's not talk about a personal, because the moment that we start talking about the personal... We are, as we've just talked about, we are creating the illusion of separation. And that's the fundamental problem that we've got, is that everybody sees themselves as an individual, a separate entity, and we're not. We're all one being. We are one. So...
Just explain what you mean by that. Can we chat about that earlier?
Okay, so... What we're pointing to here is the illusion of separation is why there's so much stuff going on in the world outside of coaching and within coaching that isn't working and is causing problems.
So politicians, we've chatted about politicians, yeah, trying to show how good they are and get ahead by just basically comparing them favourably to other people, yeah, and their policies and their views.
It's them and us. The moment that a human being feels that they are a separate entity and they are surrounded by other separate entities, they're going to feel insecure, because it's not true. What we're pointing to is, and this is every spiritual tradition, every religion, every philosophy is pointing to the fact that human beings are one. We are all created. We are created equal. We're of the same source, if you want to put it like that. So, the moment you make it personal, you're looking 180 degrees in the wrong direction. The moment that you look and you start talking about what's the same for everybody, what's a universe, this is why I try not in my coaching to talk about what I think would be a good idea. I try and point the person that I'm coaching back to universal principles, and then they will find their own way. They will come up with much better ideas for their golf swing or their rugby team or whatever than I can point to. So when we talk about a particular coach and the way they work, to me it's, as I say, it's you can coach from an understanding of what's true, and for me that just means love. So, you know, the cliche I've heard, I think it was John Wooden, said love your players and do what you want, which is actually a paraphrasing of Aristotle, which is says love and do what you will. That was thousands of years ago. So when you love your players and you have that connection with them, that understanding that we are one, pretty much one, the players will come up with better ideas for how to work in a particular situation than you probably will. Two, they're going to be connected to each other. Three, they're going to be connected to the fans and the wider community. That's more likely to be an environment where performance happens than one where you are just using a particular technique or strategy to drive a behaviour. And that's where I think, if you want to call them strategy coaches or method coaches or technique coaches go wrong. They have a set of methods and strategies that they employ. Now, the first time you use that, or the second time you use that on a player, you're going to get a response. But that response will wear off over time. So over time, you either have to keep employing new techniques and strategies, of which there are probably a limited number, or you need to keep changing the set of players that you're working with. So you either move clubs regularly, or you have a very high turnover of players within your squad, because you basically end up burning your players out, because you keep running the same strategy on them over and over again, and eventually you just don't get a reaction anymore. They just go, well, this isn't true. They can feel instinctively that what you're saying isn't true. So you stop getting the behaviours that you're looking for.
So someone like a John Wooden or an Alex Ferguson what are they doing that's separating them from other people?
They're coaching from love. You know, we see Alex Ferguson, you know, he's got this reputation as someone that threw teacups around and the hairdryer and all the rest of it, but he loved his players. You know, he's going to visit players' wives when they're in hospital. He's making sure players whose kids are poorly have got time off to go and be with their families. You know, he comes from a community in Glasgow, a working class community in Glasgow, where the whole neighbourhood was family. People looked out for each other. He's coming from love. He's not coaching from fear. That to me is where all the coaches that have the longest or the most long standing or remain in the job for the longest. That's why, because they're coming from that place, not from I need to create a reaction and create a change in behaviour.
And how possible do you think? I mean, with something we touched on as you were buying me that wonderful chai latte. How easy do you think that is to do? So I would work with a lot of coaches, or come across a lot of coaches who aren't at the top. So they're not John Wooden and they're not Alex Ferguson. They're someone lower down in the lots of environments that have hierarchies. And so how easy is it for those guys to change stuff? And what would your advice be to those people?
It's... Again, regardless of whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, whether you're a school teacher, we're just pointing to what's true about every single human being. So, you know, when I first started talking to you about this, you kind of knew it resonated with you. You didn't even know why it resonated with you.
I was struggling to understand it. I was like on a cloud in the sky trying to work it out.
Yeah, but again, that's because, I think that's because you, again, like most coaches, you come from a culture where you have a toolbox.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be sat here talking to me now if this didn't connect with you in some way, because you'd have dismissed it and gone, well, that's
unless bullshit. I'm about to like steal your phone. Then.
Well, that might. You're welcome to it, mate. If you want it, if you need a phone that badly, take it.
So but it did. It made me curious.
Yeah.
Because most of my world has been. And I'm still curious. Most of my world has been, here's the problem, here's a solution, intervention. Yeah. This will lead to this. Yeah. And I agree with you. And sometimes often I'm looking and going, well, is that going to have long term impact? Because ultimately, that's what a coach wants to have. I want to help people, become better.
And that's why this is why it's so. It's frustrating. On one hand, it's frustrating, and on the second hand, it's a massive opportunity that we've got at the moment. Because particularly, I found it in rugby. The rugby coaching community is 99% of the guys that I meet are absolutely coming from the right place. They love what they do, and they want to help people. And this is why it's so frustrating when they keep getting offered techniques and strategies rather than a deeper understanding of how the human experience is created. Because from understanding that, you know, what's the most important element in coaching for you?
Care, love.
Absolutely. It's the relationship you've got. You can't coach somebody unless you've got a relationship with them. So rather than let's explain to people why it's Will Greenwood over there.
We should get Will in the car. That'd be cool. He's got a nice car, hasn't he?
He's got a nice car.
Nice car, hasn't he?
Done very well for himself, that man.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
We spend so much time on teaching coaches about techniques and strategies, and we don't talk to them about the relationship very much. Whereas if we get people understanding the nature of the relationship, what makes a relationship work, your techniques and strategies are, you know, and I'm not saying that technique's not important, that strategy's not important. It is, but it needs to be underpinned by something
solid.
Absolutely. It needs some foundations. It needs some foundations. Otherwise, we're just throwing in, you know, you're throwing in a nice idea that you've heard that you think might work. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But every single coach I know has had the experience where they use a technique in a particular training session or in a particular game and it works beautifully. And then 2 weeks later, they do the same thing and it dies on its ass.
Yeah.
And again, we're back to correlation and causation. If it was the technique or strategy that worked the first time and there was a causal relationship there, it would always work in the same way.
Yeah.
But it's not. What happened was, at that particular moment in time, there was a connection either between the players or between the coach and the players, and the change took place and the outcome was what it was. And the reason it didn't happen the second time was not because the technique didn't work, it was because for whatever reason that connection wasn't there.
And how, I mean, like, go back to that question, how, so if I'm at the bottom of an organisation and, you know, I'm in a Premiership rugby club and the person at the top isn't thinking like you're thinking, what are the options for me?
Well, love your players and do what you want. If you understand, so this doesn't just work, again, whether you're at the top of the organisation or at the bottom of the organisation, if you've got a deep grounding in the way the human experience is created, one, you're going to have a much nicer life because you're going to understand that when the guy at the top of the organisation doesn't behave in the way that we know is helpful, you understand why. You know, you're not judging him or dismissing him. You're seeing him
what,
as...
What reasons do you think they're behaving like that? What have you noticed?
Fear. They're insecure. You know, the high-level coaching has got to be the most insecure... One of the most insecure jobs you can do. You know, you're three results away from getting the sack a lot of the time.
Yeah, no,
and so...
Absolute, so fear of...
So, well,
money, family.
Family, most high level coaches believe that the way they feel is directly coming from their environment. So, whether they're winning or losing.
Yeah.
And if you, as a coach further down that organisation, understands that your feelings have zero to do with your environment or your situation or, you know, the context of what you're experiencing, then you're okay no matter what. And that's, you know, that's if we could, you know, I'm really excited because in 10 years time we will have a group of coaches who are now at the bottom but who are learning this stuff, you know, we know who we're talking about, who will come through the ranks because they're bloody good coaches.
Yeah, but now that's they've what got I'm excited about that.
That's what really excites me is, you know, I'm talking to kids, you know, kids now who are at the early stages of their coaching lives but are starting to see this stuff. They're fantastic coaches in terms of their, you know, I always say to be a great coach you understand two things. You understand the game and you understand people. Well, the information about understanding the game, there's tons of that.
Yeah.
What we haven't got is the other bit, and that's what I'm about changing. And I'm starting to see it with the young coaches that I'm working with, and in 10 years time they're going to be the guys at the top of the profession, and this thing's going to explode and we're going to be a much kinder, much healthier. We're not going to have people, you know.
Well, what words do you think people would then use to describe Premiership football and Premiership rugby? The coaches then, what words would you hope people would be using to describe them?
That, you know, that they're enjoying it. It's not a... You know, my best mate's a professional footballer. Had a 20-year career, won the FA Cup. And I remember sitting in a pub with him.
Is it Neville Southall?
No. Okay. Right club, wrong person.
Kevin Sheedy?
No, no. You're an Everton fan, aren't you?
No, I just had Panini sticker album.
Did you? Anyway, so, and I remember...
Pat Nevin?
Close. I remember sitting in a pub with him 6 weeks after he retired.
John Terry?
No. And you know, saying to him, do you miss it? And he went, no, not really. And I was like, why not? He said, well, I just, you know, just didn't enjoy playing football. And it broke my heart because this is my best mate. I love him to bits. He's had the career that every 12-year-old boy playing the game now would want to have. And I said to him, I said, well, when was the last time you enjoyed a game of football? And he said, probably when I was about 13 or 14.
I'm dying.
And you know, from the professional rugby players that I work with, they would tell you that within a squad of 50 Premiership or Pro 14 players, there are probably a dozen of guys in that squad at any time that are on the edge of a breakdown. They're hating the game. They're insecure. They're anxious. They're playing from fear. You know it from your coaching experience. If players go out on the pitch,
I'm surprised it's not.
It's just fear of that. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm probably being conservative there.
Yeah.
But you know, you from your players, are they more likely to go out there? And you've obviously had this experience with England. If those guys are going out on the pitch and they're not afraid and they're doing it because they love what they do and they're having a great experience, are they likely to play better or worse than if they're crapping themselves because they're worried about what, you know, they're just trying to get to an outcome which they believe is what's going to make them feel good or bad about themselves?
I mean you're taking the words out of my mouth. I mean, it's about love.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what
absolutely
I think it's about.
You know,
we've only got one life. We might have multiple lives, I don't know. We haven't moved on to that podcast yet.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that one. But, I mean, I would just want people to fall in love with our sport, and I would want them to have joy, happiness. Mm-hmm. I would want... be my number one thing.
So, and this is what we see with kids. So when we're coaching kids, we see up to a certain point, playing a game is an expression of who they really are. It's an expression of love. It's an expression of happiness. And at some point, it's almost like a switch is flicked.
The adults come along.
The adults come along and sport stops being an expression of who they are. It stops being an expression of happiness and it becomes a route to happiness.
Yeah.
And that's where the enjoyment goes out of it, the fun goes out of it, the fear comes in, and it becomes... That's the kid who's in the academy going, coach, I've got a problem here, I'm not enjoying it anymore. Because he's fallen into the illusion that there is somewhere to get to that's better than here. There's a time that's going to be better than now. And in order to get both of those things, his life or his sport needs to play out in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's what we are about in terms of helping kids and helping coaches to see that that's not true. That is not true. You know, you didn't believe that when you were a kid kicking a football around in the playground at age 10. Why do you suddenly believe it now? The game hasn't changed. The game is the same game that you were playing when you were 10 or 12. What's changed is your beliefs about it. And you've learnt those beliefs probably off your parents or a coach or, you know, wider society, the media. And that's not true. But unfortunately, the misunderstanding runs deep. It's not sporting. It's not. It's cultural.
Yeah, it's very deep.
It's massively deep. It's massively deep.
But the same at schools.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're told that in order, you know, kids are indoctrinated that in order to be happy, you need exam results, you need friendships, you need relationships, you need a good job, you need this, you need that. Well, that's just not true. It is just not true. Now, there's nothing wrong with working hard to achieve any of those things. But
it's not causation.
Absolutely. Telling kids I've that got their it. Happiness
it
depends
makes sense
on
to
that.
Me.
Exactly. Telling kids that their happiness depends on that is is where
you've just changed my speech for tonight at the Elsford School.
I'll come along and do it for you if you want, mate.
Awards Day, which I'm already, yeah. That's awesome, mate. Well, look, I think we should definitely do another podcast. To warm you up for it, we're going to go stone, scissors, paper. 2 points for a stone now. 2 points for a stone. Stop thinking of tactics and strategies. 2 points for a stone. Are you ready?
2 points for a stone this time.
Yeah, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Ready? Scissors, shoot. 1-0.
Hey, my first point. Yes! First of five. Yes, I'm on a flyer.
1, 2, 3. It's 2-1.
2-1, I know. You have to tell me. I'm not stupid.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
We're going to be here all day.
2-1. 1, 2, 3. Yes! 3-1. I'm going to win this with a stone.
I know you are.
I'm going to win this with a stone. You ready? Okay. 1, 2, 3. You got me in the double buff. What's that? 3-2.
3-all.
3-all, is it?
Got me 3-all. I get 2 for one of those, don't I?
Oh, it's with a stone. Oh, I've got 3-all. Oh, God, I'm nervous now. Ready?
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
4-3 to you.
4-3. You need a stone to win this. So I'll go paper. Ready?
Okay.
1, 2, 3. 4-all. Whoever wins this takes it, right? Yes! Sam Jarman, it's been a pleasure.
Mate, thank you so much.
Cheers,
enjoyed
pal.
That. Cheers.